Hello, everyone. Welcome to Ubi Est Mia. My name is Brandon Weatherby. This episode is a chat with Christian Picciolini. Christian is a very interesting man, and he was kind enough to be a guest on my other show, You, Me, Them, Everybody, in the middle of July of 2017 at the Hungry Brain in Chicago, Illinois. The reason why we're releasing this in the middle of August in 2017 is because of the events in Charlottesville and across the nation. Now, Christian has a very interesting backstory. He was one of the leaders of the neo-Nazi movement in the late 80s and early 90s, and that happened in Chicago. And he has changed quite a bit. He's written a book called Romantic Violence, Memoirs of an American Skinhead. That came out in 2016. It is definitely worth your time. Maybe more importantly, definitely more importantly, he's also a co-founder of Life After Hate. Now, these groups are important. This group received a grant from the government, and that grant was given by President Obama, and that grant was rescinded by President Trump. Now, Samantha Bee, you might know her. She's got a fantastic show called Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. She's trying to help raise money for that group now. You might have seen Christian on CNN. You might have heard Christian on NPR and many other radio stations. So this is a very interesting time in American history, and Christian definitely has a unique perspective and a unique point of view and maybe some answers, and I think that's worth hearing. Now, the show that we do, You, Me, Them, Everybody, is a late-night style talk show. It is fun. Therefore, there is some laughter. It's not completely serious. Yes, we are talking about very, very heavy topics, but we're not taking it to a serious place, if that makes sense. We're not. This is nothing to joke about, but there is some levity here. Just be forewarned. Some other voices you will hear on the microphone is WGN's own Esmeralda Leone. She is the co-host of You, Me, Them, Everybody. And our house band for the evening is Seth Vanek. So if you want to hear the entire episode, it's a great episode. Daniel Knox is on it. Go to youmethemeverybody.com. But this episode, I think, is very, very important. And thanks for listening to this intro. So here's an interview that we did with Christian in the middle of July of 2017 at the Hungry Brain.
Ladies and gentlemen, whose name I'm going to intentionally mispronounce, please put your hands together for Christian Picciolini, everybody. Christian, please come to the stage. Tupac's changes?
Yeah, man.
Hell yeah.
Hello.
Christian, I intentionally mispronounced your last name because it's
Absolutely. Part
of your book.
My name is part of me, too.
That is technically true. Christian, how do I actually pronounce your last name?
It is pronounced Picciolini, like
okay.
Peach.
Because you are clearly an Italian-American man.
That is correct. I was also the bouncer there for a couple seconds because the two people that walked in tried to hand me their IDs when I was sitting at the bar.
To be fair, you are kind of dressed like a bouncer, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Jeans are a sensible attire. It's good to have on a black shirt and a black hat.
Well, what people don't know is when I'm done with my interview that the cover charge actually goes up to $5.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So you wrote a book that is very important, and when you published it, I don't think you realized how important it would be.
No. No, I didn't.
Okay, the name of the book is?
It's called Romantic Violence, Memoirs of an American Skinhead.
And because you are not Hulk Hogan, you actually live these things, you were a skinhead.
I was.
And more importantly than just being a skinhead, hey, all you other loser skinheads out there, try harder. I know you're big listeners to the show.
You're a huge skinhead.
Huge skinhead population and Sinclair Broadcasting Management. Those are our only two listening groups.
Ah, yes.
Who do you think's doing a terrorism
watch,
right? Looking for brown people.
Yes, terrorism is the best word to use for this. You were one of the best terrorists of the late 80s and early 90s.
I don't think I've ever heard those two words put together, best terrorist.
But I mean, there's got to be a best for everything,
that's
right?
That's right.
Good or bad.
Sure.
Please change your Twitter bio to what I just said.
Yeah, no, I was from 1987 to 1995, I was a member of America's first neo-Nazi skinhead group. I was 14 years old when I joined, and I was 22 when I left. And that was 22 years ago.
Wait, so originally, where are you from?
Chicago.
Okay.
And most people don't know that. The neo-Nazi skinhead movement was actually born on the south side of Chicago.
Oh, interesting.
Is it interesting, or once you think about it for like 2 seconds, you're like, yeah, that totally makes sense?
Yeah, but I didn't think they would organize.
So
that, yeah. Well,
I just think that the most segregated city in America, like, yeah, we're pretty cool at starting some cool stuff, guys, like the biggest skinhead movie. So that was a long time ago, but it's still clearly who you are. It's part of your life. It determined your outcome, and you're using really bad stuff to turn it into really good stuff.
Yeah, I've actually, for the last 20 years, I've been helping people leave the movement that I helped build.
Why did you leave? What was the light bulb, or what sparked you leaving?
Everybody asked that. It wasn't one light bulb. It was okay. Like a chandelier. Over time, you know, I just started to meet people that I kept outside of my social circle, and I received compassion from them, and they were the people that I least deserved it from when I least deserved it. And I'd never had a meaningful interaction with the people that I claimed to hate. I didn't have black friends. I didn't have Latino friends. I didn't have gay friends. I was so secluded from everybody.
But when you were in high school, you were the high school football captain.
That's right.
You had black players. You had Hispanic players. You didn't have just white dudes. And you were able to work on the field together as a unit.
Right.
Why do you think at that time it didn't translate into the rest of your life?
Because I don't think that I was raised to be a racist. My parents weren't racist.
Okay.
They were actually Italian immigrants who came to the U.S. in the 60s, and they were the victims of prejudice when they came. But I felt really abandoned by them because they were working really, really hard, sometimes 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, and I didn't see it then. You know, growing up, you're a teenager, and you're like, where the fuck are my parents? But now, being a parent myself, they were working hard to support the family. But, you know, I felt marginalized. I felt like I didn't really fit in. I didn't know what my identity was. I didn't know if I was Italian. I didn't know if I was American. I didn't know if I was Italian-American, American-Italian. You know, I went out and I was searching, just like everybody else, for an identity, a community, and a sense of purpose.
Do you think it's easier in 87 to get involved with this stuff or 2017 to get involved with hate groups?
Oh, well, in 1987, it was brand new. So nobody really knew what a skinhead was in 87. That was before Oprah had him on and before Geraldo got his nose broke by one. Nobody really knew. And actually, the guy who recruited me was America's first neo-Nazi skinhead leader. So was it easier to join back then? I don't think so. Is it easier to join now? It's certainly more widespread. With the internet, we're seeing a lot of, you know, propaganda going back and forth that's influencing people, news sites that I won't talk about, Breitbart.
We could talk about Breitbart because people know Breitbart, but I don't want to name any other site that's not at that level.
No, right. We don't want to do that. No.
I know you're, for the listener at home, he's smiling at me, like asking what was the site.
Well, no, I mean, they're writing about me right now. I guarantee it.
I'm sure they are.
I guarantee it.
So one of the fun things about this show is I'm real life friends with both people that are on Fox News on a daily basis.
Let me ask you a question, because I am very, I'm always like, that whole skinhead culture is very interesting, and just the when you hear, and even when you go back with the Nazis and things and Hitler, and it's like he was a tiny man and he was not exactly an Aryan and all this and not blonde hair, blue eyes. How did that skinhead leader think, you, sir, Italian immigrant parents, be a skinhead? Like, why?
Well, it didn't start out with racism at first.
Okay.
He didn't teach me to hate at first. He brought me in with pride, and he would say things like, you're a European, your ancestors are great warriors, you know, Roman civilization influenced, you know, the rest of Europe and the rest of the world, and he built me up, and he made me very proud of who I was, and I already was, because I grew up in a really small Italian, family, and then after a while, it would turn into, oh, yeah, and you should be proud. Oh, and by the way, people are taking that away from you. And then it would turn into, oh, those other people that are taking that away from you, you should really try and stop them first. Oh, and then, by the way, you should hurt them and then kill them if you can.
It seems like in 87, it seems like when you were a kid, there wasn't so much hatred of the other as there is now, or at least acceptable hatred of the other. Like Esmeralda was talking about on Sinclair and the Terror Watch, you said?
Yeah.
Terror Watch.
Terrorism Watch.
It seems like that's now the norm, and it's no longer a shocking thing. And I'm wondering, how does that affect what you do when you're speaking to kids, if their parents are watching the things that you think are maybe a bad thing?
Well, I would say that we've probably become a little bit numb to the fear rhetoric.
Okay.
You know, back in the 80s and 90s, there were racist people everywhere, just like there are now. I don't think that there are more racists today than there were then. It just wasn't cool to talk about it. It's like they came out of the sewer, and we'd been keeping the sewer cap on it for many, many years, thinking we were moving towards a post-racial society, which we weren't. And now, you know, the election happened, and those sewer caps popped off. And so many people want to push them back down into the sewer, and I say, let them come out. Because I can tell
you. So you think
you,
it's good?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think it's great. I think that while what they're saying is terrible, it's disgusting in many ways, and they're certainly hurting people. There are hate crimes on the rise. I think we needed to see it to believe it. I think we needed to see the problem exists in this country to really understand how to deal with it.
That is a wonderful, debatable point that there's not going to be consensus on. But I would just like to point out that all those people that are writing about you are going to take that quote out of context and say that's the thing, that you're actually funded by all of these horrible people. And
yeah. No, I'm not. I can tell you I can tell you that I am absolutely not funded by
anybody.
So
how much do you make a year and what's your Social Security number?
Birth date, too.
You're going to speak...
Mother's maiden name.
That's in the book.
They've already got all that
stuff. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. What makes you afraid? Does anything make you afraid at this point?
You know, no, I'm not afraid of a lot. What makes me afraid right now is how mainstream what I used to believe is becoming and how marketing savvy they've gotten at making the message more palatable to reach more people, to fool more people. That's scary to me because it's not a new concept. 30 years ago, even we recognized, like, the skinhead thing, it's scaring the average American racist away. They don't like the swastika. They don't like the tattoos. Oh, so let's grow our hair out. Let's not get the tattoos. Let's put suits on. Let's go to college. Let's get jobs in law enforcement. Let's run for office. That was 30 years ago. We called it leaderless resistance. They're now calling it the alt-right. That's what scares me, is that they're actually shiny enough to fool people into buying, you know, that fake gem.
A year ago at this time, I was at the RNC, and I was covering for WGN, who's
owned by
Sinclair Broadcasting. And I went to the Milo book thing.
Oh, yeah.
I went to the, and I'm not saying his last name, not because I don't think he needs the platform, but because
you can't pronounce it.
I can't pronounce it. Right. So I went to the Milo book party, and it was literally, it was capacity, it was 200 person room, it was 100 journalists, and it was like 50 people that were paid to be there, 20 true believers, and then 30 publicists and PR people. And as soon as the open bar was done, 90% of the journalists left. I was one of those people. And to me, I thought, this is great. This is proof that it's not happening, that the election is clearly going to go the other way, and that there's just nothing to worry about. And I was wrong. So,
very wrong.
I was okay. Yeah, I was the only one.
I just remember those days because, like, it was a thing of like, I'm really worried. And you're like, don't be worried.
There's literally
it's fine. So I was just like, okay.
That's why I think the sewer analogy is so apt, because at that time, and if things turned out a little bit different a few months ago, I don't think we would be where we're at with the openness of the alt-right. Now, do you think that we would be in this... This is a kind of pointless, kind of fun thought experiment. Do you think we would be in this place of an acceptance of the alt-right if things turned out differently on November 8th?
No, I don't think so, because I don't think it would be getting a lot of the media attention that it's getting.
Okay.
I think it would still survive kind of in the corners of the internet and still be out there influencing people. And I think that if you saw somebody like Hillary getting elected, that the propaganda you'd see ramp up from the far right, and you may get a lot more people joining, but I don't think it would get the cachet that it's gotten because of it being on every, you know, news channel from Fox to CNN to, you know, MSNBC or John Oliver.
Great, so we're in a horrible place. Now, how you do important work, you're literally going to speak to the UN.
Yeah.
You've known about this for a lot longer than the majority of the people that are listening to you. What is something, anything, that a normal person could do, and by normal I mean literally everyone that isn't you, could do to make the world a better place? I know that's a fucking hack question, but come on, I got to ask it.
No, I mean it's not a stupid question. I think we can all do. You know, people ask me all the time, like, how do we solve racism? There's so much.
That's not going to happen.
Racism.
Let's go small. Let's go real small.
And that's where I go. I go small. You know, we can affect the people that are closest to us, our friends, our family, our coworkers. You know, the person that you pass on the street every day. Say hi to them. Start a conversation with them. It doesn't have to be about politics. You'll find that we have more in common with people when we focus on the commonalities instead of, you know, starting right off the bat with, you know, who'd you vote for? And I think we should start there.
But we're in Chicago. I do the show in D.C. Chicago went, what, like 94% not Trump? And D.C. went 92% not Trump because they love Gary Johnson out there. So what? Why... It's super easy to start a conversation in city limits.
Well, I was in Montana.
Okay, here we go.
And I was doing a talk in Montana, and I invited Richard Spencer. For those who don't know, Richard Spencer is kind of like the alt-right poster boy. He spends half his time in Virginia and half of it in Montana. And I invited him to my talk, and he came. And I spent 2 hours talking to him afterwards. I invited him for coffee.
And...
you'll have to wait and see what comes out next week. So check the Google.
Okay. Well, what?
It was good. It was a good conversation. You know.
What did you think? What did you take away in the sense of, as a person, is he just a dick bag? Because you don't have to be rich. I just mean, like, is he just an asshole in just a general sense?
He is the brash, well dressed guy that you would think.
Okay, number one, he's not well dressed because he's too overweight for his suits. Okay. Once you're too overweight for your suits, you have to realize who you are as a human being. I don't wear suits I used to wear 5 years ago because I realize they don't fit properly.
Don't be a hater.
But I mean,
no. That's bipartisan. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. Fashion matters for a point. Like I'm dressed like this for a reason. I'm trying to project Mr. Rogers with this. I'm trying to project relatively reasonable with an H&M shirt. This tie is vintage, and I got this tie clip from my wife, but it's also a screw because we're getting all screwed. Get it? And then these pants are reasonable. I bought them on clearance at J.Crew. Don't make fun of J.Crew because if you know how to shop, it's the same price as Marshall's, motherfuckers. And I wear these gym shoes because they're both relatable and they're comfortable. So to say that fashion doesn't matter is fucking racist. Apologize.
Well, no. So I'm just wondering, like, you... So I'm assuming he saw you as an equal. Do you think? Do you think he saw you as an equal?
I think he did. I mean, I think everybody sees us.
Did you feel like he was talking down to you, or he was kind of just giving you the bullshit he always gives to everybody?
I think he tried. But what I found out, and you asked me, you know, what did I feel from him, is he's broken, just like the rest of us.
Like, that's what I mean. Like, is he as a person?
Yeah. Hold on. You said something very interesting here. He's broken just like the rest of us.
Right.
How so?
I think we're all broken. I think we all have potholes in our lives that through periods have deviated us. And some of it, you know, some people experience trauma, some abuse, some addiction, some mental illness, lack of education, poverty, whatever. We all have something in our lives that either did deviate us or could have potentially deviated us. And for him, his pothole, I believe, was that, you know, he didn't have a really good family life. Wah, wah.
And do you think deep down he's a good person? Do you think if you tunnel enough?
I think deep down is the real Richard Spencer, and I think that 99% of what everybody sees is an act. It's a facade. It's a defense mechanism, and it's theater. I really think so.
Three things. Before you continue, I want you to continue. Number one, I have to mention this because I wrote a book about wrestling, and I do a podcast about wrestling in addition to this. The only person that's broken is broken Matt Hardy. Number two, I think it's interesting that both Esmeralda started to smile / laugh when you said Richard Spencer is deep down a good person, and some people in the crowd did as well. Because number three, I think that everyone at their core is a good person.
Right. Well, no, because you always see him and just you think he's the epitome of evil, and that's what I'm wondering. I'm like, is he really, you know, is there something there that we can work with?
Yeah.
Once all the bullshit is gone.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I was a bigger asshole than Richard Spencer was. Trust me.
Wow.
Are you in any part of you just jealous the internet didn't exist when you were at the top of your game?
No,
I could have been the meme of the week. I could have been getting punched on inauguration day.
I am often the meme of the week in their circles. But I tell you, if the internet were around when I was around, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now. Because there would be too much documentary.
Do you think you'd be in jail, or do you think you would have never gotten into this because you would have found a separate group?
No, I think I would be in jail. I'd be in jail for sure. I think, you know, people are finding these groups because of the internet.
Sure.
And, you know, I love the internet, but yeah, you know, listen, I hate what he believes in. I think, you know, he's a pompous, I called him a pseudo intellectual. He didn't like that very much. But I also think that, you know, he has a reality that has never crossed over into your reality, Brandon, or your reality, Esmeralda.
And do you think he believes it? Do you think he believes everything he's saying, or do you think he's just kind of just saying shit just to rile people up?
I think he believes at a fundamental level what he's talking about, but I think he is ramping it up for the cameras.
Okay.
I really do. I think that. And he gave me a hug. I took a picture with him. I'll show it to you. We're both given a peace sign.
Well, you know, you're
he promised to meet me again.
Technically white to him, so it's okay.
No, listen, what do you believe? He's a dick, right? Like, his ideas are dickish, let's say that. He was nice to me, and I was nice to him, and I think that I would like to have another conversation with him. I feel like I planted a seed. I wasn't expecting to change Richard Spencer, you know, magically after one of my talks, but it was good to spend time with him to understand that, you know, he's not some monster. And, you know, frankly, if he did a quarter of the shit that I did when I was, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, I would be a little bit afraid of him, but I'm not.
Is any part of you right now just kind of bragging that, like, you were literally a tough guy and you could literally punch back?
Yeah, and I
totally.
And I didn't. And I didn't. I actually told him, I said, Richard, I said, we're in this auditorium. It was just me and him and a camera. I actually had a camera with me, so 2 hours of this is filmed. And it was me, him, and a camera. And I said, Richard, you know I could literally murder you right now. And nobody would know. And nobody would care. Ooh. And he said, well, you know, I take Tai Chi. And I said, you really want to try it?
Wait, does he know what Tai Chi is?
And then we laughed about it, and you know, I mean, it was cordial. It was, you know, it was. I don't want to.
So
say
what you're saying is you literally threatened a man's life, and then you followed it up with it was cordial.
Yeah, I didn't kill him.
That's cool.
Listen, if we went around punching everybody that we disagreed with, we'd all have black eyes, and you know, we'd all hate each other.
Do you think your tattoos help you? Because I think they have
do.
To.
They do.
If I'm a 17-year-old kid and I'm seeing you speak and like you look like a badass, you've played in bands, you've toured with Joan Jett. Well, if I'm 17, I don't give a shit about Joan Jett. Hey, 17-year-olds, Joan Jett's important.
Yeah.
Sorry. If I see you, I give you more credit. Do you always expose your arms when you're speaking?
I don't wear tank tops just like you.
Fair enough.
Now wait, for the because we are a audio podcast.
Thank you.
What is on your arms that you think would cause any sort of like, oh.
I'm fairly covered in tattoos for the listening audience.
Okay.
Many of those at one point in my life were very offensive tattoos, all of which have been covered up except for one. And it's actually one that is a band around my arm here, and it's Scandinavian or Nordic runes in a band. And to most people, when they see that, first of all, they don't know what they are, and second of all, they would never make the connection that the neo-Nazi movement co-opted that, and even, you know, Hitler co-opted runes. But if you're in the know, you know, right? And one day, 7 years ago, I was walking down the street, and I had already co-founded my organization, Life After Hate. And somebody came up to me and he's like, hey, bro, nice tattoo, white power. And I thought for a second and I said, hey, bro, let's talk. And that was actually my first intervention.
Wow.
Yeah. So it does. It opens doors. I mean, it does have credibility. I can tell you that I would never at 17 years old would have talked to a cop or a teacher or a parent or somebody from the neighborhood or a priest. But if somebody that, you know, was kind of like me, looked like me, with tattoos, I would have probably listened if it was somebody that I respected. And so I go in wanting to strangle most of the people that I work with because of the things that they say, but I don't ever argue ideologically with them. That's not my approach because I know that just pushes us further away. What I do is I listen for those potholes that I talked about, and then I fill them. So I try to make people more resilient. so that they don't have to blame the other for what they feel is being taken away. But then I also immerse them in situations that they've never been in. I'll introduce a Holocaust denier to a Holocaust survivor, or an Islamophobe to an imam or a Muslim family. And I build that bridge because oftentimes they've never, ever in their lives had a meaningful interaction with the people that they hate. And I, that was the case for me. I played football with, you know, people of color of all different colors, and on the football field it was fine. It wasn't, you know, I had a mission. I was always driven by something. But when we left the locker room, they were my enemies, and you know, I didn't know them, and that's why. And most of it was because I hated myself. I projected my own self-hatred onto others.
And if I don't understand why people are like, oh yeah, he hated it. Like, that should be so, it's such a given. You clearly hate yourself if you're doing this stuff.
Yeah. A lot of broken people in that movement.
Once again, there's only one broken person. His name is Matt Hardy, and he's on the... trying to bring some levity here. Jesus Christ, everybody. Let's end with some fun stuff. Do you think... You're an Italian-American man. Do you think if you were in high school in 97 when The Sopranos was at its peak, you would just be a big Sopranos fan?
I am a big Sopranos fan.
There you go. There you go. There you go.
But... I was a tight end.
What position did he play in football, by the way?
Some people don't realize that we're recording this for a podcast. To me, you fit in the same lane.
I'm one of the good ones.
You fit in the same lane as like a W. Kamau Bell, who I adore, and friend of the show, Bragg. You are doing really, to me, common sense work that's incredibly difficult that most people don't ever confront and understand. And it's... And in addition to confronting your past, you're making the world a better place. Good luck.
Thank you.
That's sincere. Good luck. And I think that people like you are really going to... You already know you're changing the world for the better. When do you think racists will understand graphic design?
You know, I've been struggling with that for years. I actually learned Photoshop after I got out of the movement. But you're right. They're
okay,
pretty bad
so
at it.
So when you were into like screwdriver and shit like that, I get it. That was an aesthetic choice. It was the 80s. It's cut and paste. It's 2017, everybody. Instagram filters are free. Use them, racist. It doesn't have to look like shit.
Yeah, but if you look at the creator, you know, when you first open Photoshop and it lists like the 3,000 names of the creators that actually made that product, they won't use it because they're Asian and they're Jewish and they're, you know...
I can't tell if you're making a joke right now or you're serious. I don't know if you're making...
I mean, I could see that completely. Why would you use the product?
I don't know if Christian
you
knows he's making a joke or if he's sitting in effect right now.
I was not making a joke.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, listen, let
Come
me tell
on,
you,
some,
Brandon.
Like, some racist can't get together and be like, we're going to handle this shit. We're going to reverse engineer it. Like,
no, they do that in the dark. They use Photoshop when nobody's looking, but...
It doesn't look good, though.
No, well, they don't have enough practice. Listen, let me tell you, when I was 17 years old and I was married... When I was 19 years old and I was married, my wife had a list... She wasn't in the movement. This is something I made her do. She had a list of products that she could buy at the grocery store that were not kosher. Wow. That's how ridiculous it was. Yeah. So I may have been making a joke, but, you know, looking back at it, I don't know that I was.
But now, okay.
There's literally no
good way to end this right now.
How about you tell us, where can we find more information on... the book, and maybe
true.
Trying to find
so
if you know someone who does need help or needs your
sure.
services.
Let's be honest, they're not listening to this show, so that's a pointless thing.
Well, there could be someone.
Knows somebody that may know somebody.
Exactly.
That's true. For the people that listen to the show, that actually like book places that we've done this show, someone like you should be at the Kennedy Center or the Smithsonian or the Library of Congress talking to people in a not boring way.
I appreciate that. Well, you can get my book where books are bought. That's easy enough. And I guarantee you that somebody listening today knows somebody that you know could use some help. They can go to either lifeafterhate.org, which is my nonprofit that I co-founded, or exitusa.org, which is our direct hotline for people who are looking for help.
Or if you want to have some wild card fun.
Oh boy.
Type his name into the Google search engine.
Oh yeah.
Plus, and then any terrorism, terrorist, jihad, and then his stuff will come up, and it'll be real fun.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Your complete search history has been shit, and that's wonderful for you.
Yeah, and then you'll also find the really fun stuff that the neo-Nazis like to make about me to try and discredit me, like that my real name is Abdullah bin Muhammad and that I started ISIS 20 years ago.
Do they Photoshop you, like, in outfits?
Oh, yeah.
So they've learned some Photoshop.
They make hour-long videos about me, like, on the regular.
Stop bragging.
I can't even...
But I'm imagining, like, they put, like, outfits on him and, like, his head's on, like, an outfit and they're dancing around or
something. Remind me to show you the one where they Photoshopped me to look like a rabbi. And they call me Rabbi Picklestein.
Because that's
Twitter.
Real.
Yeah.
In between the times where they've called me a pedophile, a rapist, and, oh, the latest one is President Obama left... granted me $10 million before he left office so that I could round up all white nationalist young people and put them in FEMA camps. That was
Damn.
The latest one.
So. Is it all done in MS Paint?
Hold on.
Touche.
Hold on. This show, if anything, graphic designers love us. If we could... Would you be down, if possible, if we could do a video where it's an instructional video for people that hate you, how to have better graphic design and better graphics in their propaganda about you. Would you be, like, would you green like that?
Only if I could dress up in green like Pepe the Frog.
Absolutely.
Wait,
like, we'll,
wait, but can we also...
No, this will be, we'll put you in front of a green screen and we'll go, how to make Christian Pepe, and then we'll show them step by step how to use Photoshop.
No, but what we have to do is then you have to give a certain amount of money, you can figure that out later, and then it goes towards... anti-racist things.
Yeah,
they have to pay, and it could be a minimal amount, but they have to pay to get the good stuff, and then it goes to something better.
No,
than
I just want to learn Photoshop. It's just offensive to the eye.
How about this? There was an organization in Germany that does what we do, and they went to a neo-Nazi rally, and they handed out T-shirts for free, and the T-shirts had like some kind of white power symbol on it. But when these people took the free shirts home and they washed them, the ink dissolved, and it said, "If this shirt can change, so can you." And that's pretty awesome.
And I bet you they still wore them.
That's pretty cool, but I think Photoshop is a lifelong skill that could help everyone. And I'm just trying to make the world a better place. Just like you. If anything, my job is more important than yours. Because, I mean, bad Photoshop hurts all eyes, regardless of race, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, plugs is you'll be at the UN. Check them out at un.com.
.org.
Fuck you. thank you so much for doing this.
This is my pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Christian Picciolini.
Hold on.
Maybe don't play anything with final in the countdown after he's done talking. Jesus Christ. If you would like more information about Christian, go to christianpicciolini.com. It's CristianPicciolini.com. If you just start typing it in Google, it'll show up, I promise. Also, it's linked in the podcast description. Follow him on Twitter. It's @CPICCIOLINI. For Life After Hate, it's a very important 501c3. It's kind of important right now, probably more than ever. Go to lifeafterhate.org. Thanks for Christian for doing this. Thanks to Dmitry Samarov for designing our artwork. Thanks to Daniel Knox for our soundtrack. Also, thanks to Seth and Esmeralda for being part of the show. If you would like more information about me, my name is Brandon Weatherby. Follow me on Twitter. It's @YMTE. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful night.